The next episode of the Tradepreneur Show, we're going to be talking about what we wish we knew when we got into the trades. Not only that, but for those of us that went on to be in business for ourselves in the trades, what we wish we knew. Tune in to find out firsthand. Welcome back to another episode of the Tradepreneur Show. I am here, Patrick Summers, your host, doing this. I love it. I got my co-host, Tanya Priest, back with me. And you probably recognize this gentleman from many episodes back, a couple episodes in. I highly encourage you to check them out. This is Francisco Rodriguez. He is co-owner of General Air Conditioning and Plumbing with me. So he's my business partner. He's also my friend. We've been through some good times, some bad times, some up and down times, but we go through them together. And so I'm always honored to have you.
Excited to be back.
And I will tell you, the episodes he was on, we talked about one kind of your journey into the trade, yeah, right? And we also talked about sales.
Absolutely.
Right? Because you're like a, I call him a guru. He's a sales guru. So we talked about that. I mean, he sold $5 million in 8 months. So extraordinary.
11 months sick with COVID in November.
Yeah, November, that's right. That was, yeah. So
a month off.
Yeah. So I remember that, man. It was COVID. I look at time like there's pre-COVID and post-COVID, because the time during COVID was like I lost track of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's really, yeah.
Before we get into today's episode, I want to share something with our listeners. We just did two episodes on follow-up.
Right.
Right. We did kind of follow-up and then some follow-up techniques. And we just found out today, as we're filming this, we had two sales that we started the day with that resulted from follow-up. One sale was our comfort advisor ran the lead, and we have a CSR in the building that answers the phones and helps book the calls and take care of the clients. I'm sure most of you know what a CSR is. Was doing outbound follow-up.
Yeah.
Right? Well, why don't you tell the story?
Yeah, he's been following for a little over 3 weeks, constant communication with the homeowner, checking in, and this morning he was able to close it for $52,000.
It's amazing.
All follow-up.
Follow-up.
Took it right away from the salesperson.
Gone.
That's the power of follow-up. And if you think back to the statistics, some of the statistics we went over on the power of follow-up and how many people don't follow up. So if you're following up, you're already, so much is going in your favor. So there's a perfect example of it. I mean, that's a huge win.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that one of the biggest things with follow-up that, you know, as a salesperson, you know, because I've been in the field, people aren't afraid to do a follow-up because they're afraid of the rejection of the client's going to say no, or they don't even know how to properly speak with the homeowner on the follow-up, you know, the process of it, because they think a follow-up is calling the client and saying, oh, I just want to see if you made a decision. That's like the stupidest thing to do. It's like, why not, you know, follow up with information that they may need or that you didn't leave at the, you know, when you were at the home. So I think a lot of it, of people not doing follow up, it's afraid of rejection.
Well, I would agree with that. I believe that, first of all, rejection, like nobody likes to be rejected, right? And you already didn't close the deal. And, you know, if they continually be rejected, I believe it's one of the hardest parts about sales.
Absolutely.
Is the no's, the rejection. And to your point, I think you nailed it. And it's like, hey, I'll just walk away from this one.
They promised me they're going to call me back.
Yeah.
I feel good about it.
Yeah, I love that. I feel good about it. Like, what exactly do you feel good about?
Yeah.
So it's like that person is...
They got sold you.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we had another one, same day. Today,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, same day was a client that called in for a service call, and we told them we couldn't get out to the call. It was for an evap cooler, which is, you know, about an hour and a half from here, Yucca Valley. I mean, 29 Palms, I'm sorry. And we told the client we couldn't get out there. Our CSR, Stephanie, took it into her own hands to be like, look, I'm going to call the client and get a complete understanding of what is it that they need. And in reality, what they wanted to do was buy an evap cooler, and it sold for $8,000.
So over the phone.
Over the phone.
By somebody in our office
that took the extra step of, you know, taking care of the client.
Yeah, and I guess they wanted service, but you
should all the help. She got the rules. You know,
yeah. And the reason, it may be, you know, you've only got so many seats on the airplane. You've only got so many technicians who can run calls. So an evaporator cooler. Thank you. And you're like, okay, we can't take a tech out of the desert.
First of all,
Air conditioning, and it's this hot, different story, but the coolers aren't going to work that well in this heat anyway. So it's not like an air conditioning. So, but still, instead of just letting it ride, they somebody in our office, one of our teammates, called out, followed up, and so two sales today without running a lead.
Yeah, she's all like, oh, I hope you're not mad because I called the client back and he wants to buy an evap cooler.
Well, and that's what it's about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love when somebody says, I hope you're not mad. Be like, you did the right thing.
Yeah.
You did what you're supposed to. You know, I work for a hospital. You know, I was at firefighting and EMT back in Pennsylvania. And I worked at a couple different hospitals. That's how I met my wife. She's a nurse. She was working at one of the hospitals I worked at. And this hospital had this philosophy that, listen, if you take action to take care of a situation for an issue and it's wrong, we will support you. As long as you made the decision putting the patient, the employees, and the hospital first, right? You took all three of those into consideration. And you also did it with the information you had on hand, meaning you took all three of those into consideration, you made a decision, and then it turns out maybe the information you had was wrong or it changed, and your decision turned out to be wrong, maybe even detrimental to some extent, but you took all of those into consideration at the time and went forward with the decision, the hospital would support you. And so I remember I was working security. I worked security and engineering department. One night I was working security, and the engineering department, I would just help out. They were starting to merge the two departments. So I was pretty much a nobody in the engineering department, right? Well, one night it starts freezing rain, and the parking lots and the driveways in the hospital start icing up, and it's about 2 a.m. And, you know, it's very slow that time. It was a weeknight or something. And so what I was supposed to do was call the on-call guy for engineering, and then he would come in, or he'd send however many people he needed to send it, he'd get the trucks, and they'd go ice the roads and everything like that. And I was like, you know what? The freezing rain part had stopped, but it was still icy, it was still slick. I'm like, I landscaped. I know how to drive a truck. I know how to run a front end loader. So I went down under the parking garage where the trucks were kept there. It was always kept with salt in it, you know, ready to go. So I went, I took the truck up, I drove it all over the property, did all the parking lots, all the roadways, ice, spread salt everywhere, drove back down, got on the front end loader, loaded it back up with salt, parked it, never said a word to anybody, right? But I'm thinking, like, I'm a security guy, but I'm like, I was business minded. I'm like, man, to call first of all, somebody that's sleeping, it has to be to work in the morning. Right. And all the cost that costs the hospital to bring somebody in to do that. When I can do it, I'll just go do it. But then I was like, man, I'll probably get in trouble. I'll drive him a truck up to. So some time went by, and something came up in a conversation. I think it was the whole philosophy the hospital had. And I said, well, look, I want to share something with you because I'm going to test this, right? So I told one of the managers what I did. He's like, are you kidding me? I'm like, oh, no. I'm going to have to write my resignation speech, right? He's like, are you serious? I said, yeah. He said, you got in a truck, and you drove it around and then spread the salt and then loaded it back up. Yeah. That is fantastic. He's like, that's amazing. Like, that's what we need more of. Right? Now, obviously, I don't encourage somebody, if you're not experienced driving a truck, or a front end loader to go drive a truck and a front end loader. But I did have experience doing that. And so I'll just go ahead and do it. So
and that just, you know, brought me, reminded me, you know, back in the day when we used to do a lot of the training for the technicians and we used to do role playing things like that. And one of the things that you preached all the time is, look, if you're at a client's house, make sure that you're making decisions based on the information that you have in hand. And if you make the wrong decision, we're going to back you up as a company. And I remember like a technician one day where he was at a client's house. And I think the client needed a motor and a capacitor, and it was going to be almost $1,000. And the client only had like $300 in their account or something, like wiped them out. And the technician, "Look, Patrick, like I did it for $200 because I couldn't leave them like with no money in their account." Came back and told, and you're like, "You did the right thing. You took care of the client. And we're never going to leave a homeowner, middle of summer with kids that, low income without air conditioning."
And I remember that. And there was a couple instances like that. I remember I was coming back from a expo or a convention or something. I was getting on a plane. One of our techs called me and it said, "Hey, I just changed out the condenser fan motor. I didn't charge the client at all." I said, "Okay, so tell me more." And he said, and he explained the whole situation. He said, "I believe it's the right thing to do." I said, "So do I." I said, "We screwed up and we probably contributed to that."
Yeah.
Right. And I said, "How's the customer?" He's thrilled. He can't believe that we stood up and owned it and took care of it. And the amazing thing is being able to do that without having to go to a manager or get permission, because you do the right thing. And I will tell you that philosophy came from my time working at that hospital. It was Paoli Memorial Hospital, Paoli, Pennsylvania. And that's where I got the philosophy from. And I've carried it forward into life, into my experiences, which that's a perfect segue into kind of the main topic that I want to discuss. And that is, listen, you're in the trade. You've been in the trade for quite a while. You worked for several different companies. You've even worked for a trade school, right? And you've been in the trades for a very long time, but pretty much just worked here.
Yeah,
but you work for a tire company, mm-hmm. and things like that. So it's like since high school you've had other gigs, yeah. But this is the only trade thing. And for me,
26 years.
26 years, Christ. You don't even look 26. I now for the trades. Now when I was in high school, I shared before, like my buddy's father, Rob Farino, his father, or his stepdad, started a business, and his brother, F.J. Hess and Sons, in the Poconos in Pennsylvania. And they started out of a little Volkswagen pickup truck. And I would go work for them when there was a snow day, or believe it or not, I got suspended from school on occasion. And so I would dig trenches, sometimes with a shovel, once I used a Kubota backhoe. But I basically just ran and got material and supplies and everything like that. And so I worked that, and I'd done just about every job under the sun, from driving a truck to doing roadside service for truck tires. But this is the only like long term in the trades, and I've been here since 2010.
Yeah.
And so, but what I want to ask you guys is, looking back, what did you wish you knew back then when you first got into the trades, or what would you have done differently, if anything?
I mean, for me, so I started in the trades being in the office, and I, cushy job at a desk and in air conditioning and in dispatching, you're just trying to take care of our clients, move techs on and stuff. And I really wish for me that I could have better understood what our technicians were going through in the field. Until I was in sales, I had no idea. I was like, "Okay, you guys ready for your next call?" Just better understand like what they go through, so I could better support them in the field. When I went into sales out in the field, it was getting an addict of being in the heat every single day. It really was an eye opener. So for me, being in the office, I wish I really had a better understanding of what the techs go through.
You don't really appreciate it until you go through it.
You do it.
You're right. Because I know, and I always say this, like we'll have the office, the dispatch, the CSRs call and text and go, "Are you almost done? Where are you? How much longer are you? Get moving on." And until you're actually in that attic with them, mm-hmm. or in that side yard or wherever it is under the mobile home, and you're actually cranking it out and experiencing what they're experiencing, you don't really understand
at all.
Right. Of course, on the flip side, they don't understand what it's like to have a customer call and say, "Hey, where is this? You said that it would be here between this time and this time, and nobody's here, and it's hot, and da da da." So, yeah. How about you, Francisco? Anything in particular?
I think, for me, that the thing that comes to mind is really self-education, and not just self-education, but also going and learning from people that already have that success going in their lives. As an example, like with me, I wasn't a process person. especially when it came to, you know, being in a client's house, I'd try to reinvent the wheel and it doesn't work. So following a process and sticking to that process really changed like my career because, you know, I'll give you an example. By training myself to learning a process and literally following the process step by step, for me, it was way easier when I sold $5 million than when I sold $1 million my first time I sold $1 million. Because I had a proven process that I followed every single time and I didn't deviate from the process. So really self-educating yourself. Don't try to reinvent the wheel. Like, go and learn from people that are already having that success that can teach you very quickly. And as a technician, look, it's, you know, a lot of technicians, it's very hard for a technician to read a book and how they educate themselves. Like with me, I got to watch a video. I'm auditory. And I learned that I learned by listening and seeing. So me going and writing with technicians and seeing what they do, I was able to memorize that and then come back and just mimic what they were doing and had more, you know, way more success than they were doing. So just educating yourself and learning your style of learning.
Yeah. And I would say for you, the comment about process is, many times over the years that we'd work together, when you would go out with somebody, whether it's a technician or comfort advisor, and you would, they would see, like, you would actually run the call and they let them watch you.
What I did, yeah.
And you would tell me how they're always amazed. They're like, wow, you actually do that.
Yeah.
You actually do this process. And you're like, yeah, of course I do. And I know from when I was in the field with you, you would come out and you had a process and you followed that process. And it didn't matter if you could get to the kitchen table or not. I've seen you do that process standing over a trash can with the book laid out, going through the presentation, doing it exactly how you're supposed to do it. Because you would always, you would follow the process regardless of the environment you were in.
Correct.
You know? And so, yeah, I think that's a big takeaway. Is the importance of process.
Yeah, and look, it doesn't necessarily have to be even just the sales part of it, but even just how the technician arrives to the home, how they greet the client, where they were, you know, floor savers, like, that's a process. And, you know, making sure that you're following it every single day, every call, you know, because what happens is you're fresh in the morning and by late afternoon, you're like, well, I just won't do that because I just want to get home. Well, you can't do that because then that's when your success plummets.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's so true. And it's easy to deviate from the process when you're tired. You know when it's really easy to deviate from the process? When you're having success and you start to think you're the success and the process has nothing to do with it.
Well, I remember like us having a conversation of talking about like with process, and when somebody's not, you know, having success and they're not following the process, and the worst thing that could happen to a salesperson is that they fall into a sell and somebody buys when they're not following the process because they're like, I knew it. I changed the process and it worked.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Heard you say that before.
Yeah. Yep. It's so true. And then they get further and further away from the process, and then they slowly recreate their own process.
And next thing you know, they're not doing anything.
Yeah. And then they can't figure out why. And then you go ride with them and you're like, well, here's why. Let's show you exactly why. I was like, he's going to see this hit coming. So, I didn't get him, by the way. He's too damn fast. So I will tell you.
Yeah, but you just dislocated my shoulder.
I will tell you one of the things that, and now this is, I do my best to live my life not having any regrets. Obviously, there's things I wish I did differently or I could do over or I could do again. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you just got to move forward with life. And you can't, you know, it was, who was Steve Jobs, who said, I believe it was in a commencement address speech, but he talked about how you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect the dots looking backwards.
Right.
When you're here and you're going through something, you can't really make sense of it and connect those dots. However, once you get somewhere and you look back and you're like, I was going through that because of this. It helped me here. And so I would say the one thing I wish I knew now, and this is one of the reasons I like doing this podcast and one of the reasons I'm passionate about young people in the trades, is I wish I got into the trades sooner. I wish, there's so many times I think back to when I was working for F.J. Hess and Son. Man, I should have stayed. I should have got out of school, see if they would hire me full time or go work in the trades full time. man, I had an opportunity when I was, and I later on, I was living in Philadelphia, the suburbs. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs of Philly, but I moved back to the suburbs of Philly, and I was in my early 20s, and I had this woman, her husband, the family had a sprinkler company, did fire sprinkler.
And your face on the slag, you're right.
Is it? So, they did fire sprinklers, and she came to me and she's like, hey, you know what? I could, this is when I was working in the hospital, right? In the security and engineering role. And she said, I could get you with the union. I could get you in the pipe fitters union. And I was like, I don't want to be in a union. I don't want to be a pipe fitter. And I think back, I'm like, man, what if I had gone and been in the pipe fitters?
Right.
Right.
All the way back then.
And so, but you can't think that way. Because I think like, okay, then maybe I wouldn't have met my wife who's been working at that hospital.
Right.
Right. And then all the different things I did, all the different careers I did, all the experiences I had, I really believe prepared me for this role. But I do think, man, what if I would have got in it much earlier, much sooner? And I got into it when I was supposed to get into it. But I will tell you, if you're younger, if you're thinking about getting into trades, man, the opportunity in the trades is amazing. And I guess what I didn't know back then was I just thought if you become a plumber, if you become an HVAC guy, if you become a roofer or an electrician, whatever it is, like that, you're going to have to do that your whole life. And you think, well, man, can I do that when I'm 65? Well, what I didn't realize is, and yes, you can, and there's tremendous opportunity, and there's a lot of people still doing it, having tremendous success, but there's also you transition. Mm-hmm. There's other roles, right? Like, I had no idea when I got into HVAC, all the different roles you could get into.
Yeah.
And it's just something that's really, really amazing as far as the opportunity and the growth that you can have. And you know, you could be over here as a technician, then you could be over here getting more specialized in things, whether it's refrigeration, commercial, residential, industrial. You could get into where you're doing estimating. You know, that's all you're doing. Management, sales,
accounting. I mean,
accounting. Yeah. So sky's the limit. I guess I would say if you've got the opportunity to get into the trades and it's up your alley, go have it.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, I'll tell you. Like, I don't know why this podcast is bringing me so much memories, but I was just remembering. You know, one day you and I were driving to Vegas. It's like when we first started traveling together. We were going training in Vegas. And everything, like, we're starting to get to know one another. And I'm like, have you ever been a painter? And you're like, yep. I'm like, oh, have you been a gardener? Yep. I did, like, everything I told you, you're like, I've done it. I'm like, have you been a truck driver? You're like, yeah, I'm with my dad. And I'm like, what the hell? What do you mean you've been like? So finally, I'm like, okay, we're like on the freeway. There's a freaking train passing by. I'm like, I'm going to get the son of a bitch right now. I go, have you ever been a train conductor? You're like, nope, you got me there.
I do remember that. And
like, it was snowing.
Wasn't there a frozen railroad on the side of the road? It was snowing on the way to Vegas. In fact, somebody was ahead of us in Vegas, sent us a picture from their hotel room with snow coming down. And yeah, it was like, it was crazy. We're in the desert and like, it's snowing and it's accumulating. And literally we go by and there's like this rabbit frozen on the side of the road, covered in snow. But I had done a lot of jobs. When I drove trucks with my dad, and we drove tractor trailer, we ran teams. And the reason we did that was we wanted to buy some tractors and lease them on and have a small little fleet of trucks. So I'm like, hey, we should go out and run teams and run it like our own business and see if this is something we want to do and can do it the way we want to do it. And we'd be out driving around, and I'd see, like, my dad. I'd be like, man, I could live here. And we goes, man, I could live here. Because we're all over the country and we're in Canada. My dad's like, Jesus Christ, you're gonna live everywhere. He's like, I'd be like, man, I could live here. I'd like to live here. But it's just, I don't know, there's so much opportunity.
Yeah,
absolutely. I feel I'm extremely fortunate. I wanna hit one last thing on this. And this is particularly more you and I. We bought the business from Frank Harrison, right? And You were in tech, so you did everything out of business essentially, but you were the sales manager, and you still are, but now you're co-owner. I was a general manager. And so what do you wish you knew now, or knew that you know now, or didn't know when it came time to be the business owner?
I think, you know, the immense responsibility that nobody imagines that you're going to have when you have, you know, 50, 60, 70 employees that are depending on payroll, on, you know, making sure the financials are right, that we have, you know, money every week to be able to, you know, payroll. But just having that, you know, that responsibility hit you, it's like, it's crazy.
Yeah. There's some areas that I think when I stepped into my role as a CEO that I wish I had a little bit more experience in, like, the insurance side of it. And I got exposed to a little bit of it, but it's totally different when you're the guy. But I will say, though, and somebody had said something to this effect to me at one time, because they had bought the business, I think, from his parents, this guy. And he had shared this with me, and I experienced it firsthand, and this is it. It's like when I was a general manager, it didn't matter what was going on, what was happening, I could always walk away. I could literally go in, turn my keys in, and say, I'm done. And I had nothing. I was as free as that. But as soon as those documents were signed, as soon as the business sale was executed, literally, in that moment, you just can't walk away.
Nope.
And you could be having a bad day, a bad week, quarter, month, year, whatever it is. It doesn't matter what's going on.
The responsibility never stops.
It never stops. And now you're like, oh my God, like the families that you're responsible for making sure get a paycheck each week.
Yeah.
It takes on a new impact, a new meaning, the reality of it.
And you're right, because, you know, one of the things, you know, like what happened, especially like during COVID, and that nobody wanted to work or was afraid to work. And look, the business has to keep going, and nobody wanted to go sell or do anything. So I'm like, look, like I just can't let it fail. So like, I got to get my ass up and I got to go do what nobody wants to do. And I'm going to go produce those sales because the company needs it. Our, you know, team members are dependent on that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And man, it was, you know, it's been, I think almost 8 years.
Yeah.
Since we.
2018.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's time moves very fast, especially when you buy a business. So anyways, hey, listen, Francisco, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me back.
I know we see each other every day. We work.
At least for two or three minutes.
I know. Sometimes we don't even see each other. We're in the same building, but, you know, we got our different responsibilities and things we're doing.
Yeah, I think it's funny because some people think that we don't like each other or that we don't talk to one another, or like, you know, we're not like good friends and, you know, good co-owners, but they don't see the behind the scenes on how much we do communicate on a day-to-day basis, especially at the end of the night.
Yes, and you've just given me an opportunity to have you back. I'm bringing you back for the next episode because I want to talk about that. I want to talk about how we function as partners, right? Because I think that's really important. If you're on your own or you have a partnership, man, that is super critical. So, but with that said, we're going to wrap this episode of the Trapreneur Show up. It's time to call it a day, go see our families. And before I go, I want to say thank you for your support. Please like, comments. I read the comments. I look at the analytics. I really enjoy doing this, so I want it to continue to be successful. So thank you so much for your support. Until next time, be well.